Thank you. Be seated. Court is ready to hear argument from Relator and N. Ray A.I.
May it please the court, Mr. Wendell Hall will present argument for the relator. Relator is reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal.
May it please the court, Wendell Hall for Relator AIU Insurance Company. In this case, Louis Drivas, the insured, was sued in Hidalgo County as a result of alleged contaminants caused by wells operated by Louis Drivas in Hidalgo County. Louis Drivas called on AIU Insurance Company to defend the pollution lawsuit, which AIU did under a reservation of rights. Not satisfied with the reservation of rights letter, Louis Drivas sued AIU in the underlying declaratory judgment action regarding coverage and also other extra contractual claims. The underlying lawsuit was filed in Hidalgo County. It involves a coverage dispute. The insurance contract includes a forum selection clause, which in this case AIU seeks to enforce, requiring that the dispute be resolved in the state of New York and under New York law. In the trial court, AIU moved to dismiss the Hidalgo County litigation based upon the forum selection clause, and the trial court denied the motion. AIU and Louis Drivas and Louis Drivas' broker, Aon, are sophisticated corporations, all located in New York. They negotiated the pollution liability policy. And at the time of the motion to dismiss, not only had this policy been negotiated, there were 51 endorsements to the policy that had also been negotiated.
Let me ask you this.
Yes, Your Honor.
If we were to treat forum selection clauses more like special appearances, you lose on mandamus.
If you treat them like special appearances, I'm not certain that we would lose on mandamus.
I mean, if we say that it more closely resembles a special appearance than an arbitration clause.
If the court reaches that conclusion, I suppose that's a possible result, but it's certainly contrary to what the United States Supreme Court has said in connection with arbitration clauses and forum selection clauses.
I'm just saying if we were to determine that the forum selection clause is more closely analogous to a, your motion is more closely analogous to a special appearance type motion than it is to an arbitration, you lose by mandamus.
Well, if it's more closely analogous to a special appearance, then I would hope we would have an interlocutory appeal, so that we would have some remedy to enforce our contractual right.
But we don't have, so you'd lose.
We would lose if it was more analogous to a special appearance, but a special appearance is contesting jurisdiction.
But you would agree then that your sole remedy would be to go to the legislature to carve out an interlocutory appeal on special appearance, as they've done in other areas.
Unless this court permits mandamus relief.
I guess why we have all these cases out here, and everybody knows it's a zigzag line, but why should this case fall on the side of irreparable harm that for which there's no adequate remedy by appeal, when two things. One, all these other cases fall on the other side of the line, most notably Canadian Helicopter, and secondly, the legislature keeps invading this area by setting up more and more interlocutory appeals, seeming to say that they're making statements about when matters should be looked at in the course of the trial as opposed to after it's over.
Well, in these circumstances, Your Honor, I would agree with what Justice Heck and Justice Owen said, obviously, in the dissent in GNC franchise. AIU and Louis Drivas are sophisticated corporations. They made a calculated decision to have any dispute, whether it's arbitration, dispute resolution, or litigation, that this be tried in New York.
But the dissent would have to prevail for you to win then.
Absolutely, Your Honor. Absolutely. You mean the dissent in GNC?
Yeah, I mean, you're relying on a dissent.
Absolutely, Your Honor. As well as the United States Supreme Court decisions, insure Carnival Cruise Lines and...
But those cases uphold the validity of reasonable forum selection clause. They don't say that state courts have to invoke their own procedure to grant immediate relief.
No, they don't, Your Honor. But if
and
we...
Let's go past the merits of the dispute for a minute.
Okay.
Because that does seem to be the majority rule. We can come back to it. But let's... What the question seems to be focusing on is...
So why is there no
item
now?
Why shouldn't... Why... How do we allow a mandamus now and not allow mandamus relief for a large number of interlocutory orders where the ruling is case dispositive?
Well, I'm not sure what other cases we're comparing it to, but what I can say about this case is these two parties negotiated a contract. They agreed to try this case in New York. If that contract isn't enforced, then Louis Dreyfus has lost the benefit of its bargain, and, AIU has lost the benefit of its bargain. It will be forced to try this case in Hidalgo County. It will then appeal the case, and ultimately, assuming that the forum selection clause is upheld, then the entire trial, the appeal through the Court of Appeals, and ultimately this court's decision will cause the trial attorneys and the appellate attorneys to expend an incredible amount of resources.
But you're probably, if you win in Hidalgo County, you're probably not going to complain too loudly on appeal, even though you have this golden.
I'm sorry, I did not hear your question.
Should you win below
in the coverage
of Texas courts? On this coverage dispute, you probably won't ask for a new trial in New York, even though you might arguably be entitled to it.
That's possible. I don't know.
Maybe you'll win a clean sweep here, and you'll want to set it aside and see if you can make it 2-for-2.
That's true. You know, it's interesting. The courts are often critical of attorneys and attorney's fees and the expense of litigation. And here's a clear opportunity for the court to take care of something that is so simple. The parties contracted to try this case in New York State. They are sophisticated parties.
We haven't done it before. Why should we start now?
You have done it before.
Not in this context.
Not in this context, but you've done it in other contexts.
We've said many times before that expense and, venue is the same scenario.
Yes, and venue has been the subject of mandamus in this court before.
Well, but by legislative enactment now, we can review it, but why shouldn't your remedy be with the legislature?
Why shouldn't our remedy be with the Supreme Court? Because these rules are enacted through the common law, just like the enforcement of arbitration provisions by mandamus.
But there was a federal policy there.
There is a federal policy.
First of all, we had our own interlocutory appeal on the state.
Correct.
Arbitration. And there was in England, we agonized over this, but we looked to a federal policy towards a speedy resolution to create the mandamus remedy.
Well, and just like in England, the AIU insurance company will be deprived of the very clause it contracted for if it's forced to litigate this matter in Hidalgo County, and then ultimately appeal the case through the 13th Court of Appeals and then eventually up to this court.
Well, couldn't that also be true where a trial court erroneously fails to grant summary judgment? I mean, in some other case, but the defendant conclusively establishes their entitlement to summary judgment and the trial court says, no, I don't care what the law is, you're going to trial. Would you contend that there ought to be mandamus relief in that situation?
No, I would not, because there was not a contract before the advent of the litigation saying what was going to happen in the event of litigation.
But the same policies that you mentioned would apply. It'd be a useless trial. You'd be sitting through a 4-week trial and attorney's fees would be expended, and everybody knows that once this gets on appeal, it'll be reversed. So.
Well, but again, in summary judgment proceedings, I don't think you can always guarantee what the outcome is going to be. I think when you have an agreed-upon contractual provision like you do in this case, I think we can foresee what the outcome is going to be. It's clear and unambiguous. None of the exceptions to the enforcement of a forum selection clause apply in this case. That's undisputed.
Another question about waiver as far as delay in asserting the right to transfer?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Isn't there a question about waiver as far as waiting to assert this right? I mean, how long was it after the litigation was answered that this was raised, that it should be in New York rather than
I know it was raised in the first amended answer, and the motion to dismiss was filed within 5 months of the initiation of the litigation in Hidalgo County. I'm not sure 5 months constitutes a waiver under any of this court's law in terms of sitting on one's rights.
Is there anything in the record as to why the 5 months? Or are you just saying that's de minimis?
No, there is not, Your Honor. There's nothing in the record why the motion wasn't filed for 5 months.
I guess you would obviously concede at some point it would be waived, like if you went to trial and judgment was entered in Texas court, you couldn't say, we don't like that judgment, we'd rather be in New York.
Certainly, I think if you go all the way through trial and then you raise it for the first time on appeal.
So we have to draw a line there somewhere. But you're saying you're safely on.
I agree that, yes, we're safely on the side of there not being a waiver when the motion was filed within 5 months and when the defense was raised in the First Amendment pleading. I don't see how that constitutes a waiver. The three exceptions for not enforcing these forum selection clauses are, well, actually, if Louis-Dreyfus wants to avoid enforcing the forum selection clause, under the law, it must show that it is so gravely difficult and inconvenient that Louis-Dreyfus will, for all practical purposes, be deprived of its stay in court, or that there was fraud in the inclusion of the forum selection clause in the contract.
And if there's a dispute about any of these, then we shouldn't be in the mandamus business.
That's correct, Your Honor, and there is no dispute about any of these. And let me address those. First, the choice of forum was made in bad faith purely to discourage the pursuit of legitimate claims. That's negated by the fact that this contract was negotiated in New York, where Louis-Dreyfus had an address, and Louis-Dreyfus benefited from the New York Free Trade Zone. It received tax and fee incentives by negotiating this contract in New York. So there can be no argument by Louis-Dreyfus that there was some fraud or that the forum was selected in bad faith. Second, the choice of forum was obtained by fraud or overreaching. There is no allegation in this case that the inclusion of the forum selection clause was included in this contract as the result of fraud, fraudulent inducement, or coercion. And the United States Supreme Court has said, and I think this court would agree, that the bare allegation of fraud simply can't defeat a forum selection clause. Otherwise, every party who's trying to avoid a forum selection clause will simply say, oops, fraud, and then the forum selection clause is defeated for the remainder of the litigation. Third, the party had no opportunity to reject the contract or the forum selection clause. This contract was heavily negotiated, 51 endorsements. Aon, the insurance broker for Louis-Dreyfus, shopped this contract around and eventually settled with AIU Insurance Company. The insurance contract was negotiated. The forum selection clause was available and could have been negotiated, and that's in the record. And the parties chose not to negotiate the forum selection clause. Why? Well, Louis-Dreyfus received a tax and fee incentive under the New York Free Trade Zone by agreeing to this contract under New York law and in New York State. So Louis-Dreyfus had a clear incentive to want to sign off on this forum selection clause in the state of New York and have New York State decide this case. Finally, public policy favors enforcement of this forum selection clause. There's a public policy interest, I think, in enforcing contracts as written rather than rewriting them in conformity with some vague and shifting alleged public interest policy that Louis-Dreyfus has alleged in their petition or in their response. Second, there's a specific public interest in allowing sophisticated parties to anticipate dispute resolution, just like in arbitration provisions, to negotiate how to deal with those provisions and to plan accordingly. And that's what the parties have done in this case. And for this court to not enforce this forum selection clause by mandamus completely nullifies the forum selection clause, and it's meaningless. Unless, Chief Justice Phillips, as you said, we somehow win this case in Hidalgo County, which, frankly, I doubt. But if we were somehow fortunate enough to win this coverage dispute in Hidalgo County, sure, the problem would be solved. But on the other hand, we're still ignoring the intent of the parties and the contract agreed upon between these sophisticated parties in New York State. This is not like a contract of adhesion, the Carnival Cruise Lines case in the United States Supreme Court, where you have a forum selection clause on the back of a passenger ticket that someone takes. And I might point out that the Supreme Court in that case also enforced the forum selection clause. Again, not dealing with mandamus issues, but it was in fact enforced. And I think the court should treat and give respect to the same rights of the parties in this case as the Supreme Court did in Carnival Lines and also in the Bremen. And the intent of the parties should be enforced just like an arbitration provision. If the parties want to plan accordingly and they want the case to be litigated in New York, this court should respect that intent and permit the parties to litigate the matter in New York. and the trial court should have granted our motion to dismiss and permitted this case to be refiled in New York in accordance with the party's wishes and in accordance with their contractual agreement.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel. The court is ready to hear argument from Ms. Palmer.
May it please the court, Mr. Levon Hovnatanian will present argument for the real party.
May it please the court. Your Honors, my name is Levon Hovnatanian, and I represent the real party in interest in this case, Louis Dreyfus Natural Gas Corporation, an oil and gas producer. The first fundamental reason that this court should deny mandamus relief in this case is that AIU has an adequate remedy by appeal. And with that regard, I want to address the only four states in their brief on the merits.
I want to ask you, what is that remedy? This is a contract, and arguably your client has not lived up to the contract because they sued in Texas as opposed to New York. Now, what remedy, at the end of the day, does the other side have for that failure to live up to the contractual obligation?
Your Honor,
can they get their attorney's fees back?
I beg your pardon.
What's their remedy?
Their remedy is an appeal from the final judgment.
How does that address the failure to live up to the contract? That deals with the judgment.
Correct.
But how do you remedy the fact that they've had to litigate in Texas and expend all these fees and then go relitigate in New York? Do they get their money back for the Texas action?
Or no, Your Honor.
How do you remediate the failure to comply with the contract?
Well, I need to start at the beginning of your question, if I may, because it's important. There's an undercurrent running through Mr. Hall's argument and in their brief and also through your question, and that is the presumption that they're correct.
Well, let's assume. I'm just addressing adequate remedy by appeal.
Okay. In other words, Your Honor,
let's assume you lose everything
there's
else.
There's no waiver. Public
no waiver. It's enforceable. They're, ultimately, at the end of the day, they would be entitled summarily to reversal.
Right.
Where is their adequate remedy by appeal?
Well, then my answer must remain the same. The adequate remedy is, at the end of the case, in an appeal from a final judgment, presuming, of course, that they have not prevailed in the trial court. Now, I agree.
But you have failed to live up to your agreement to file it in New York. How do they get the benefit of their bargain from you? Do they get damages? What do they get?
Your Honor, I suppose there could be a breach of contract at the end of the case, presuming that they prevail in the appeal. I can't think of any reason off the top of my head that would prevent them from suing Louis Dreyfus and say, here, you breached the contract. Therefore, we had to incur all these expenses and all these attorney's fees and all these costs, court costs, to prosecute this litigation in Texas when we should all the time have been in New York City. That would be one way, I suppose, that they could be remedied. But the fact is that cases time and time and time again say that the adequate remedy in a case like this, dealing with the enforcement of a forum selection clause, is at the end of the case in an appeal from a final judgment.
But those are statutory venue. You don't have the legislature doesn't say, you know, give you the right, in other words, and to sue on that. You have a contract, and you agreed to do something. And I'm just asking you, when you don't live up to that right, what's the other side's remedy for that essentially breach?
Your Honor, a breach of contract action. A breach of contract action. Of course,
What do you think the damages would be?
Your Honor, I'm speculating somewhat here because this
it's rather important to your position.
Yes, sir.
So what do you think the damages would be?
I think they would possibly include the court costs of the Texas litigation, the attorney's fees in the Texas litigation, and the expenses, for instance, discovery expenses in the Texas litigation. Of course, there's a little bit of the specter of offset here, because if the case should have been litigated in New York all this time, it's not like that litigation would have been free. There would be attorney's fees in New York. There would be court costs. There would be expenses.
But they're going to have to do that again.
Your Honor, in this case, that is very true, but only because they have sued us in New York City in a declaratory judgment action. Absent that, it wouldn't be true unless at the end of this case a court of appeals or this court said you should have been in New York City all along. So with due respect for their position, if anything, that's a self-inflicted wound. That's not something that we have caused by way of damages. But if you look at the four states that are cited in their brief, North Carolina, Vermont, Alabama, and California, you see a compelling reason why we should not, as Texas should not, be handling these issues on mandamus. Those are the only four states that they point to. Yet North Carolina has a statute that provides an interlocutory appeal to adjudicate the enforcement and the effectiveness of a forum selection clause. Vermont has a rule of appellate procedure, Rule 5B, that provides an interlocutory appeal for just this kind of case with the permission of the court. California, as they concede on page 12 of their brief, while there is a remedy by mandamus in California, it is in their code of civil procedure. It is not a court-made or a court-allowed remedy. And that knocks them down to a single state where they can point to and say, we should be doing it like that state and not like the other 49, and that is the state of Alabama.
Well, do you have jurisdictions that have refused, where their appellate opinions refusing to grant mandamus?
Yes, Your Honor. Indeed, and in all fairness, there are not a lot of them, and they're cited in our brief. They're mainly federal court opinions. One is from
state. Do you have a state appellate case refusing to grant mandamus?
Refusing to grant mandamus under circumstances like this? No, I can't say that we do.
So really, they're ahead one to nothing.
Well, Your Honor, I guess in the unique procedural context of this court, I would respectfully differ and say we're ahead 49-1, or at the very least 12-1, because we do have 12 Texas intermediate court opinions that are in our brief and in our August 25th letter brief, where a court of appeals has adjudicated these very issues in Texas on mandamus, whereas they can only point to a couple of intermediate court opinions from the state of Alabama in an appeal from a final judgment, whereas they can only point to a handful of cases from another state where this was handled on mandamus.
What about our decision on the state where there was a contractual agreement to go to an appraisal system, and we could have waited till the end of the trial and said, whoops, the trial's a nullity, go back and start over by doing an appraisal, but we said this is a contractual remedy that the parties have contractually agreed to and it ought to be enforced. How is that really different? It's that this is a private agreement, and really to not give effect to it, what's the practical remedy?
Your Honor, I'm not very certain how it's different. I recall in that case, the dissent, Justices Baker and Hankinson said, there is the problem of the time and money issue. The majority did not deal with that issue.
Well, we weren't persuaded by it, or obviously
correct.
It wouldn't have come out that way. How do you distinguish, because that was a contractual, private contractual agreement, dispute resolution, if you will. And that's sort of what this is. We've just chosen to resolve our disputes in New York. And how is that different from what we did in Allstate?
Your Honor, I see it as different in two ways. Number one, it's different historically, but because of what we've just been talking about, how these cases have always been handled in an appeal on the merits. I also see a little bit of a difference in the contractual obligation. A contractual obligation to go to not file suit in one court, but instead to file suit in another court, is not like dispute resolution. Dispute resolution, said this court in Anglin versus Tips, is a wonderful thing for Texas citizens because it is cheaper than litigation. It is faster than litigation. It involves the use of expert fact finders, which litigation, except in a bench trial, does not. When you have those types of public policy concerns, and as your colleague pointed out, in Anglin, the court said there is a weighty state and federal public policy in favor of that kind of dispute resolution.
Well, don't we have federal overtones here? I mean, if you're asking essentially a Texas court to say, notwithstanding what two sophisticated parties have agreed, we're not going to let New York courts handle this. We're going to ignore the parties' agreement, and we're going to paternalistically take this case.
Your Honor, no, not exactly. I think that the problem is the trial judge in this case, the respondent, could have relied on our waiver argument. He could
assuming,
have...
Assuming we don't buy that. I'm just talking about the adequate remedy discussion. I'm talking my point is adequate remedy in public policy. It seems to me there's some federal overtones here where we will not enforce parties from another state's agreement to litigate in the state where they both have places of business and at arm's length negotiation.
Your Honor, and I agree with that. There are federal overtones in cases like the Bremen versus Zapata Offshore, Carnival Cruise Lines, which Mr. Hall cited. But those federal overtones, like the opinions on which they're based, reach a very careful stopping place. The stopping place is, while there is a federal and a Texas public policy in favor of arbitration, in favor of, in those cases, requiring a party to live up to its contractual agreement. Those cases don't say we are going to force a particular remedy on state courts.
But we've done that on the federal side. This court has said if you don't have a right of appeal under the, at least under the old statute, we haven't decided under the new statute.
Right.
You didn't have a right of appeal to force arbitration on federal matters. And so we gave a remedy by mandamus.
Correct.
And I'm having trouble seeing the U.S. Supreme Court has clearly held that arbitration is merely forum selection, and those are the words they have consistently used. Why is it this just like that?
Your Honor, it's not just like that because of the very policy that we've been talking about. The fact that arbitration is so supported by the federal public policy and the state public policy in its favor because it's cheaper and faster and utilizes expert fact finders, that justifies the immediate and the extraordinary relief of mandamus. So said this court in Anglin versus Tips. The court said...
So if we could show in a given case, the U.S. Supreme Court would say, well, if you can prove it's more expensive in arbitration, we're not going to make you go to arbitration.
Your Honor, I would phrase it more in terms of if there is an enormous public policy, a national public policy that is at stake, then we might not be here. Then we may have never brought this litigation in Texas.
Let me interrupt here, if I may. What is the prejudice to Louis Dreyfus to pursuing its claims in New York State?
The prejudice, Your Honor, is not just to Louis Dreyfus, but it also that question relates to the public interest in this case. The underlying case involves the pollution of lands in South Texas, injury that has been worked to Texas citizens in their lands and in their persons. So it's fairly natural when there is a coverage dispute to bring the lawsuit in Texas.
I understand that, but my question is, what is the prejudice to Louis Dreyfus to pursuing its claim to New York State? If we decide today the case in Texas is over, we have to go to New York, what's the prejudice?
Your Honor, I'll begin my answer, and I will answer your question directly. I'll begin by saying there is no prejudice requirement on Louis Dreyfus, but the prejudice would be being hauled to a forum away from the majority of the witnesses that relate to this case, away from the situs of the injury, away from our preferred forum, and this court has said before, all things being equal, the plaintiff ought to be able to choose its forum.
And aside from selecting the forum, if those are prejudicial factors for Louis Dreyfus, they're also prejudicial for AIU.
Your Honor, I beg your pardon, prejudicial for AIU to be here in Texas?
If the prejudices are being away from the witnesses, right, being away from the situs, those prejudices would be equal for both sides.
Your Honor, I suppose that is true, but of course there's a unique twist to this case regarding the prejudice of Louis Dreyfus in that they have sued us in New York. They have asked a federal district court in New York for a declaratory judgment, which is all over the record, and I know the court knows that. But what I'm saying is they're not getting any relief there. We are wind up, both sides are prosecuting actions in two different states at the same time.
And I understand the argument. I think it's a difficult question, but I fail to see any prejudice that you're articulating here to Louis Dreyfus. It wouldn't be similarly a prejudice if these are prejudices to AIU. Let me move to another question.
And Your Honor, I would concede beyond those, I'm not aware of any.
Would it establish or could it establish a practice that if parties agree to a forum selection clause, no fraud, no collusion, no reason to question the validity of the clause, that a party could come to Texas, file that suit here, assuming there's personal jurisdiction, and therefore always and forever vitiate the agreement to pursue their claims in a different jurisdiction? All you'd have to do is get it filed in the state of Texas, then you'd have a right to pursue that claim through judgment and appeal, and always and forever ignore the agreement of the parties. That's the floodgate on one side. The floodgate on the other side is opening the doors to many, many, many types of mandamus proceedings that we may not want to or be able to handle. Why is the floodgate on AIU's side more problematic than the problem that I just described with sanctity of contract being undermined?
Your Honor, the answer to that is a procedural one. It is because the safety valve to stop the flood, so to speak, on the AIU side of the table is immediate. It's in the trial court. It does not require extraordinary relief. It does not require anything beyond a motion in the trial court, and that is the filing of a motion to dismiss. Your Honor could review case after case after case from the intermediate appellate courts. In fact, many are cited in our brief where that safety valve worked and either a judgment was affirmed, in other words, a motion to dismiss, the granting of the motion to dismiss was affirmed, or a judgment was reversed and the case was dismissed with the Court of Appeals saying it should have been brought in a different form all along. The difference between those cases and this case is that the trial court, the respondent, looked at our evidence regarding waiver and regarding public interest and said, or he didn't really say in the order why, but for some reason, which could have been those grounds, he determined the motion to dismiss should have been denied in this case. That was their first safety valve.
The safety valve works when the trial court dismisses. I'm having trouble seeing where the safety valve works when you have to go through a full trial, an appeal to the Court of Appeals, perhaps to this court, and at the end of the day, you've got a meaningless contract provision, it seems like.
Your Honor, that's true. At the end of that case, if the Court of Appeals said the motion to dismiss should have been granted, you're absolutely right. And it's cold comfort, no doubt, to AIU to hear that, well, you had an adequate remedy by appeal when the outcome of that appeal is they were right all along and they should have been in New York or Connecticut or whatever their chosen forum was. But that's the reality of mandamus relief. The reason they shouldn't be entitled to shortcut that is because it's so extraordinary and it's so immediate that this court has continually held that we are not going to get involved, we are not going to disrupt the trial court's docket unless there are the kind of immediate and urgent, I believe the court's term is manifest urgency, those kind of circumstances that justify extraordinary relief.
Well, let's say we were absolutely convinced that the forum selection clause was valid on this record and that this case should have been brought in New York. And but we nevertheless denied mandamus relief, knowing that we're sending a case that has to be reversed to trial with all the discovery and all that that's attended to it. You can understand, assuming that we believe that, and I'm not saying anyone here does, but that the forum selection clause is valid, not waived, et cetera, you can understand the appeal to looking at mandamus relief in this situation.
I do, Your Honor, without question.
And an appellate frustration with a system in which the trial courts don't recognize the validity of these clauses.
Agreed.
So
absolutely.
On the other side of that, you know, if we could carve out an exception that, where we said if it's the form selection clause is absolutely valid in that circumstance to avoid the waste of resources both by the trial court and by the parties, will grant mandamus relief and limit it to that. What's wrong with that?
Well, Your Honor, a couple of things are wrong with that. The first thing that's wrong with that is that should be a remedy granted by the legislature and not a judge-made, a court-made remedy as granted by this court. Their own cases prove that. Their North Carolina cases, Vermont cases, and even California where the issues dealt with on mandamus, those cases prove that. This court has continually proved it with the legislature granting an interlocutory appeal for the state act arbitration cases, the denial of motions to transfer venue, which are subject to mandamus, as Mr. Hall correctly points out, but because the legislature says they are. And in fact, in 1999, before that particular statute took effect, this court said in In Re Missouri Pacific Railroad that an appeal was an adequate remedy for the denial of a motion to transfer venue. The court says the same thing about special appearances. This court has never reviewed special appearance on mandamus.
Well,
we have in CSR and several other cases.
Your Honor, that's right. But, well, there's a difference. But
right.
I beg your pardon.
Well, that was going to be my question, is if we were going to carve out mandamus review of forum selection clauses, can you think of a distinction we would draw in terms of reviewing special appearances?
Well, Your Honor, the big distinction, and this enables me, I'm happy to say, to backtrack to Chief Justice Phillips' question, special appearance denials are now reviewable, or grantings, by interlocutory appeal. I mean, the legislature has stepped in and said, here's your remedy, and it's by appeal. That's why this court is presumably never going to hear those kinds of appeals again, or rather those kinds of mandamuses again, because there is an adequate appellate remedy. That is their true remedy. This court said in Anglin versus Tips that the only reason it was granting mandamus review over the Federal Arbitration Act cases was because there was no other avenue left. And yet Congress has said, we want immediate review of these cases. And the court said, we prefer interlocutory appeal to fill in the gap of appellate jurisdiction.
Let me ask you about your public policy argument. You alluded to it in your argument today. It's in your brief. You're making the argument that this should be in Texas because Texas citizens' property was damaged.
That's one reason.
That's your client's obligation, is it not? Louis Dreyfus is going to pay for all those damages, I assume, if it's liable.
Yes, Your Honor, but that's, of course, why we have the pollution legal liability.
So the property owners are going to be made whole whether you've got coverage or not. Is that correct?
Not necessarily, Your Honor. That depends on some factors which are not present in this record, so I'm reluctant to speculate.
So you're suggesting that if one party is bankrupt, a Texas court ought to look at that and say, well, that's a reason to hold a New York company here in Texas, because you're saying that's public policy that we should look at who's got the ability to pay? That seems to be what your brief is suggesting.
No, Your Honor, I'm not suggesting that.
What were you suggesting?
Well, I'm suggesting that the reality of this case is there's $105 million worth of coverage from a solvent insurance company that could be used for remediation and compensation.
Your client's going to pay the remediation, aren't they? It's just the money going back to your client. This isn't talking about dollars going directly to Texas citizens, are we?
Your Honor, with all due respect, I'm not sure. That might be a distinction without a difference. The fact is the money will go to the Texas citizens.
The judgment will be against your client.
That is correct. If there is a judgment.
So why should we look beyond your client for public policy reasons as to whether Texas citizens are going to get paid or not?
Your Honor, because it's reality that there is insurance coverage in this case.
That's what I'm saying. You're asking us to look at who can afford to pay and whether one of the defendants is bankrupt or not, and factor that in as to whether we hold a New York corporation at the trial in Texas.
No, Your Honor, I don't think it really has anything to do with bankruptcy. There's no suggestion in the record as to whether Louis Dreyfus could pay the judgment for $105 million or not. All I'm saying is that is a reality in this case. That's why we have insurance. And nobody disputes that. That's why we have insurance, so that if we get hit with liability, we will not, we will be covered for it. We will not have exposure for it. And that's just... But I'm not saying the court should base its decision on that. I'm not saying that solvency or bankruptcy should play some part in this case or future cases. I'm just saying in this case, that's the reality of how the judgment, any adverse judgment, would be paid. Now, Your Honor,
Let's assume that we recognize forum selection clauses, which I don't think this court's ever done. Other courts in Texas have done it.
Sure.
And let's assume we recognize the typology that the federal cases raise, which is they'll be recognized unless one of these three tests is not met. And let's assume the previous dissent prevails and we decide to look at mandamus. Are there any of those three grounds in this case where the facts are murky enough that it would suggest we shouldn't grant mandamus here, even if we might in that perfect case?
Your Honor, the answer is no, but with a capital but after that. No, but those aren't the only three grounds. If you look at the description of those three grounds in their brief, they cite Carnival Cruise Lines, and they accurately say three grounds on which forum selection clauses may be invalidated are 1, 2, 3. They don't leave any room for the traditional grounds that have always existed in Texas, which is, for instance, waiver, the public interest, the interest of the witnesses. That it's undisputed, or it should be undisputed, that these have always been held as good grounds, when proven, to invalidate a forum selection clause in Texas. We pled and proved all three of those grounds in the respondent's court. And with that, I know I'm out of time, but I want to, if possible, answer Justice Hatch's question.
I can dig this out through your briefs if we get down the corner.
And, Your Honor, I'm not trying to cut you off. I'm just trying to...
I understand. I think I understand your position, that although some of those seem to me might overlap with Carnival, but waiver certainly doesn't.
Agreed. And I wanted to answer Justice Hatch's question from a few minutes ago when he started to ask if the court would give me permission to do that.
Remember it, and it still is.
I can remember it, but I think you covered it with Judge Wainwright, so that's fine.
Thank you.
One other question, sure. Counsel. If you assume that AIU is right on the fence, then is violation of the sanctity of contract irreparable harm?
No, it's not irreparable harm, Your Honor. Well, it never has been in forum selection clauses, forum selection clause cases. It's not irreparable harm because at the end of the day, they do have an appeal from the final judgment. Now, does that make them completely hold, as Justice Owen rhetorically asks, do they get their attorney's fees back? Do they get their costs back? Do they get their expenses back? No. But the way to do that, I suppose, this is not an issue that has been briefed by the parties, but might be to bring that breach of contract action. Presumably the parties could determine whether to bring that in Texas or New York, and we might not be before this court again. But that would be my best answer on an unbriefed issue, is their remedy is an ordinary breach of contract action, just as any other breach of contract case.
Do you know why Louis Dreyfus filed in Texas instead of New York?
Your Honor,
and can you say
it? Well, that's a critical distinction. I can't tell you that the record explicitly says that, and I'm reluctant to go outside the record for obvious reasons. Anything beyond that record, I think that the best answer is, in the record and in the brief, there are compelling reasons stated for this lawsuit to have been brought in Texas.
Thank you, counsel. So, do you have the right to bring a contract action after your trial and two appeals?
If we did have a right to bring a contract action, that's a useless remedy. I don't understand why we have to go through the entire trial and appeal, ultimately prevail in Texas, and then go sue in New York to try to recover our breach of contract damages. Again, that falls back into
the whole... So you're disclaiming it.
I'm not disclaiming it. I'm just saying it falls into the whole category of the constant harping on lawyers about wasting and using attorney's fees, using judicial resources unnecessarily, causing clients to have to expend an inordinate amount of attorney's fees on matters, when this thing could be nipped in the bud at the very beginning by enforcing the party's contract. It's a simple remedy to go through to avoid an incredible waste of attorney's fees and judicial resources. Simply because at some point down the road, in 6 or 7 years, we can sue in New York for breach of contract because they didn't file their lawsuit in New York. What a hollow remedy that is. And I would really encourage this court and hope this court would take a second look at mandamus relief and not fall into the mantra that, you know, if you grant mandamus relief in one case, it's going to open the floodgates of mandamus litigation. On this record, I think the facts are as clear as they could be. And I think it's clear that that AIU is entitled to the relief it sought. These are sophisticated parties that have negotiated a bargain, and they should be held to their bargain, just as the Supreme Court has urged in the forum selection.
Let me ask you real quickly. What will be involved in this deck action? They're fairly straightforward, aren't they?
Not when you have extra contractual claims. They're usually not very straightforward. They usually get pretty complicated.
So it's a separate action.
It's a separate action. There's the contamination lawsuit action, and then there's a declaratory judgment action because they weren't satisfied with the reservation of rights letter.
So right, but does the deck action just speak to coverage? Isn't it just a declaration as to whether there's coverage or not coverage?
That's right, in addition to extra contractual claims that
if
were also filed in the
found.
Deck action.
If coverage is found.
If coverage is found, that's correct.
That's and those correct. The bad faith claims are then tried in the deck action?
That's the way they've been pleaded. So, yes, they would be. And we're in Hidalgo County. Another Court of Appeals opinion, in the Wells Fargo case, which we cited to the court just in the last month or so because the decision came down July 10th, the 14th Court of Appeals enforced a contractual waiver of a jury trial. And I don't think that's going to open the floodgates of litigation because two parties decided in advance of any litigation that they were going to forego any right to a jury trial. And the party who lost the motion in the trial court trying to enforce the motion to enforce the contractual provision to forego a jury trial, took that up by mandamus to the 14th Court of Appeals, and the 14th Court of Appeals said, we agree. the parties have decided to limit their exposure or limit their expenses, however they want to characterize it. They've decided to do that in advance of litigation, and we're going to enforce that and hold the parties to that contractual provision. I don't see that as some huge.
You have a side on that case?
Yes, I do, Your Honor. It's cited in a supplemental letter brief that we filed with the court, so it is before the court, and we attached a copy of the slip opinion as well. Again, there would be no prejudice to Louis Dreyfus litigating this case in New York. They have an address in New York. They benefited by signing this contract in New York. All the parties were in New York when the contract was negotiated. And as a matter of fact, a majority of the witnesses reside in New York and Connecticut. And so in terms of convenience of the parties, New York is the more convenient forum.
You'd agree that there's been no additional jurisprudence or development of the jurisprudence since our denial in GNC?
No, that's correct, Your Honor. There has not been. There has not been. I would agree that this court has been reticent to expand its mandamus jurisdiction in other issues and in other types of cases. And I am hoping that the court will move from that position and in this case, enforce the party's contract.
Thank you, counsel. That concludes the argument in this morning's cases, and the marshal will now adjourn the court.
All right.